From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. There is a little-known epidemic in the United States that is killing increasing numbers of people each year. It's little known because the victims are disproportionately poor and non-white. Pedestrian deaths have been rising in the U.S. steadily, while driver and passenger deaths have remained largely unchanged. In a new book examining this grim trend, the policies that drive it, and what can be done about it, is my guest, Angie Schmidt, a renowned national expert on sustainable transportation in the U.S. She was a longtime national editor at Streets Blog, covering the movement for safe multimodal cities. Her writing has appeared in the New York Times, The Atlantic, and more. And she now joins me to discuss her new book, Right of Way, Race, Class, and the Silent Epidemic of Pedestrian Deaths in America. Welcome to the program, Angie.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, I have to confess, when I saw your book, I was surprised. It was not something that I had heard about, thought about, or even expected. Tell me how much pedestrian deaths have increased over several years. What are the kind of numbers that we are seeing in the United States?
Right. So there's been about a 50% increase in pedestrian deaths over the last, roughly the last decade.
50%?
Yes, that's wow. Right. And at last count, there were more than 6,400 a year.
So 50% over a decade, and we're talking about upwards of 6,000 people a year. And of course, this is something that we're not seeing very much about. I imagine that a big part of it has to do with who its victims are. Who are the victims? What does statistics and record keeping show about who is basically dying from being hit by cars in American cities?
Right. Yeah. This problem is a little bit like Corona, where you would think, you know, not knowing much about it, that everyone would be impacted sort of equally. But when you dig into the data, a lot of this inequality that's a part of our society, a lot of the systemic racism starts to sort of come through. So Hispanic folks are at increased risk. They're about 1.4 times more likely to be killed. Black folks are even at higher risk. And the group that's most affected, Native folks, are 4.5 times more likely to be killed than the average person in the United States while walking.
Why is this happening? What has changed in a decade? If passenger and driver deaths have remained largely unchanged, but pedestrian deaths have increased, I mean, you know, is it that people are driving more recklessly? What has happened to cause this dramatic shift?
Yeah, so there's actually a few things going on, I think. So one of them is that the American population is aging, and older folks have always been at increased risk to be killed while walking for a number of reasons. Some of them are fairly obvious. So number two, we have some demographic changes taking place in the United States. We have a growth of poverty in the suburbs. You know, that phenomenon is known as suburbanization of poverty. So that means more folks are out walking in suburban locations that really weren't designed with pedestrians in mind. Thirdly, we have a lot of population growth in the Sun Belt region of the United States, and that traditionally has been the most dangerous area for pedestrians. And then finally, and this most important, so we have these demographic changes that are putting more people sort of in harm's way in risky positions. And they may be more vulnerable because of their age in the first place. But in addition, we've had a big change in our vehicle mix in the United States. Over the last 10 years, there's been an enormous increase in SUVs. We've seen sedans go out of style and start to disappear from some of the big automakers, even portfolios. So we have this big increase in bigger vehicles, and SUVs and big pickup trucks, they hit pedestrians higher on the body and with greater force. And there's some pretty strong data, including from the Federal Highway Administration, that shows pedestrians struck by SUVs are 2.5 to 3 times more likely to be killed than if they're struck by a sedan.
Let's go through some of these issues in a little bit more detail. The design of cities and how streets are built and designed, where grocery stores are placed with respect to neighborhoods. How do you analyze the role of such things? Particularly, I imagine in lower income neighborhoods, you might find more people walking to the grocery store or back and forth, and maybe having to cross, you know, multi-lane streets and being more vulnerable to being hit.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. So the most dangerous kind of roads are called suburban arterial roads. And those are roads, it's just a term for, like you said, multi-lane, high-speed roads. And they're especially dangerous when they have a mix of retail and residential, especially residential that is serving lower-income folks. So pretty much anytime you have a street like that with fast food or with retail, be it a big box store, you're going to have people needing to access it on foot. And there's been some research that's shown like that for every Walmart, for example, that's added in a low-income neighborhood, they can predict there's a measurable increase in pedestrian crashes for every location.
Wow, that's incredible. You know, we don't really think, I imagine city planners do, but the average American doesn't think about a big box store opening and its relation to the neighborhood in which it opens, the design of the streets and the placement of homes in relation to stores that attract shoppers. But of course, that has a big role to play. I mean, is it just a matter of putting walkways in the right places?
I think that would be a good start. Yeah, I think that's just been sort of an afterthought. And one of the reasons I think people don't think about this that much is because so many of us that are in positions of influence, like in the media or in government, just aren't put in that position where we're relying on the bus to get to a low-income job at a Walmart, for example, and have to cross a very busy road, maybe at night. So I think that's one of the reasons it's been sort of like an invisible topic. But yeah, I mean, the people who do have to walk to a Walmart, for example, they have to navigate usually a very large parking lot that has no real safe access for pedestrians. And, you know, the placement of the bus stops, the street lighting, there's all kinds of factors that could influence their safety that often aren't even considered.
So you have the issue of design. There's parking lots. There are walkways. What about just simple warning signs? I mean, this is something that's incumbent on cities. And we do see that if there's enough noise made by neighbors in a particular neighborhood about safety issues, usually people have to get together to petition cities who will maybe put a speed bump in or who will put signs in. How does that work? Is it something that cities in general just wait for people to die and residents to get angry and organize before putting in safety measures?
Yeah, that is usually the way it works. And unfortunately, a lot of times, even if they are organized, city staff is not very helpful. The engineering, the traffic engineering profession, I write a lot about in my book. It's really, there's sort of an ideology that's been the basis for traffic engineering, and it goes back to sort of the highway era in the United States. And the real focus there has been moving cars quickly. That's sort of been the sole focus of transportation planning in the United States for a long time, reducing delay for drivers. So engineers use rule books that tell them how to design roads, and a lot of the rules are actually biased against pedestrians. Like, for example, one that I cite in the book is there's something called a warrant. So before transportation engineers can add a signalized crosswalk, so with a traffic signal, there have to be a number of people hit and killed in that location in a year. I believe it's five pedestrians hit, not all killed, I'm sorry, five pedestrians hit in a location in a year, or 93 pedestrians per hour have to be crossing in order for the engineering manual to say a traffic signal and a crosswalk is warranted.
Wow. So we are basically relying on drivers effectively avoiding pedestrians to ensure pedestrians are safe, rather than designing streets with pedestrian safety in mind.
Right. Yes.
Incredible. there is the issue of the kind of vehicles that Americans like to purchase. You call them killer cars. Let's talk about killer cars. There's so much that is folded into this. Generally, when we talk about the rise in SUV sales in the US, it's with respect to fuel use, the oil and gas industry pushing for the gas-guzzling SUVs. But how dangerous are these cars to pedestrians? Often people buy them, not because, of course, they want to spend more money on gas, but because they think that SUVs are safer for their families. I can't tell you how many friends I have who have upgraded from sedans to SUVs once they had a child, thinking that that SUV was going to keep their child safer. What's the problem there?
Right. Yeah. So there, even the question of whether SUVs are safer than sedans, it's really not straightforward. And the idea that a bigger car is safer is not necessarily true, even for passengers and drivers. But we know very clearly that bigger cars, SUVs, pickups, very large pickups are much more dangerous, particularly for child pedestrians. There may be a lot of visibility issues near the front and the back of some of these larger vehicles. Like some studies have shown, there's like a 10-foot blind spot in front of some of these bigger vehicles, like a Cadillac Escalade, where a child would be totally invisible until they're standing 10 feet away from the front bumper. So it's pretty bad. And in the United States, we have a lot of vehicle regulations. We require things in vehicles like, airbags, anti-lock brakes, a lot of things. There's like hundreds of pages of regulations, but they only apply to, so far we've only used them to protect drivers and passengers. We've never imposed regulations on vehicle makers specifically to protect pedestrians.
So who is benefiting from this? Is it SUV makers? I mean, is it just sort of really effective public relations and advertising that that convinces Americans SUVs are the way to go, and it just tends to be more profit-making for car manufacturers and, of course, the oil and gas industry?
Yeah, sort of. It's sad, but so it has been very, very profitable, the move from sedans to SUVs. And also some of these very large pickup trucks are very, very profitable for automakers. And it's disproportionately benefited American automakers who have been traditionally more invested in trucks and SUVs than foreign automakers. So that makes it a political challenge to address for lawmakers, because, you know, the American auto industry is located in sort of the Rust Belt region and supports a lot of good paying jobs. But, and again, going back to profit, these vehicles are very profitable for the automakers. The numbers I've seen for one of the, this is one of the top selling vehicles in the United States, this Chevy Silverado that the maker Chevy makes $17,000 on in profit per vehicle sold. So enormously profitable for those guys. And SUVs are similar. SUVs and crossover SUVs, they tend to cost about the same to construct and make as a sedan, but they typically cost $10,000 to $15,000 more. So they're $10,000 to $15,000 more profitable for automakers to sell. And so a lot of the advertising, and automakers are enormous advertisers. They spend more than $30 billion a year advertising, and that really influences people. And it definitely is part of the reason.
Are there statistics showing that SUV incidents or accidents, if you will, are more fatal than sedan accidents? I mean, I imagine that when you're hit by sedan, you might be more likely to live because, well, your whole body might not be crushed.
Yes. The Federal Highway Administration, they did a literature review in 2015, and they found pedestrians hit by an SUV are 2.5 to 3 times more likely to be killed than those who are hit by a sedan. And there's some other research that shows, so we've seen about a 50% increase in pedestrian deaths, like I noted. But even if you hold traffic crashes or pedestrian car crashes steady for the last 10 years, they have, there's been a 80% increase. So what I'm trying to say is 30% of the increase is just more severity, not an increase in crashes overall. So that could be a couple of things, but one of the clearest sort of rationale is that vehicles are getting bigger and heavier.
Another trend, of course, in the United States over the past decade, which I'm wondering plays any role in the rise in pedestrian deaths, is cell phone use. More people have cell phones now than ever before, and it's deeply tempting to check your Facebook posts while you're driving. Are we seeing more distracted driving because there's just so much cell phone use?
So it's a little bit difficult to tie that to car crashes just because most people aren't very forthcoming about it if they were distracted before a crash. Hmm. And usually our crash investigations aren't very thorough. But we do know that people who have smartphones use them all the time, like use them on almost every trip and are distracted by them for a significant amount of time on most of their trips. And we also know that that is really, really dangerous. It's a lot like drunk driving, distracting on the danger level, but it hasn't been sort of stigmatized the same way.
So here we have thousands and thousands of pedestrian deaths per year. The number is rising. What are, is this trend being noticed by authorities who can actually do something about it? Or I should maybe first ask you, what would you say to city authorities and planners and policymakers? Because if we know the trends that are linked to rising pedestrian deaths, we can clearly, obviously, do something about them.
Yeah, so a lot of cities really have been trying to tackle this. They've been adopting, they call it Vision Zero plans. So Vision Zero is this idea that was imported from Sweden. And it's the idea is that no amount of traffic deaths should be considered acceptable. In the United States, our policy has always been, well, how many traffic deaths did we have last year? Let's try to do a little bit better. So this is a big sort of paradigm shift. And a lot of cities like New York is one of the leaders, San Francisco, New York is redesigning, like they're retiming their traffic signals. So pedestrians have a little head start on traffic. They may be redesigning roads and adding bike lanes and that type of thing. So there's a lot of tools. Cities are really important, and road designers play a really important role in addressing the problem. In addition, I think there's a lot of room for progress on vehicle regulation. Like I mentioned, we have some semi-autonomous safety features that are starting to come standard in some luxury vehicles, like automatic emergency braking or pedestrian detection, that have been shown sometimes to have a big impact. But so far, the federal government has held off on requiring any vehicle regulations that would protect pedestrians.
If this is an issue that has policy solutions, why do you think people are holding back, cities and authorities are holding back from addressing it?
So some of it is inertia, that our sort of systems, our infrastructure systems are still sort of set up from the highway era, and there hasn't been a fast enough and a big enough change. I also think the demographics of the people being killed, a lot of times, people who are most affected haven't really been empowered to speak up, or aren't able to influence the political system the way better off folks are that may have more of a self-interest in fast car commutes.
So in your book, you have many stories of individual lives lost, so many tragic stories. And I imagine that is, of course, done so that people can see the human cost of this unaddressed problem. How important is it to share these stories to a wider audience? Because it's easy to look at these individual deaths as tragedies, but not necessarily see them systemically as a whole, as a problem that has systematic reasons behind it. I mean, we look at, you know, every time there's a mass shooting in the US, we have a conversation about guns and about the availability of guns. But when somebody gets killed, a pedestrian gets killed on a street, it doesn't generate conversations about geography and city design and SUV use.
Yeah, that's a really good point. The media has traditionally not done a great job with this issue, or although it's getting better. Typically, if a pedestrian is killed, there might be one or two paragraphs in the newspaper, and it'll be really impersonal, and they might have the effect of sort of blaming the victim. So they might like imply the victim was at fault, and that's sort of it, right? We don't hear much more. We don't get like with the opioid epidemic, we started to see, you know, really sympathetic profiles of the people who are being affected. And I think we need that kind of coverage on this issue in order to move forward. But it's seen as so sort of routine and unsexy. And so all these people who are impacted by this problem, not just pedestrian deaths, but car crashes in general, just sort of suffer silently. And it becomes like a very private issue, even though it's affecting thousands of people every year.
And shouldn't this also be seen as part of the systemic racism that we have built into American cities? I mean, there are so many inequities built into our, say, systems of education, our criminal justice system, and also when it comes to traffic safety issues.
Yeah, the same sort of thing. I think, you know, inequality, economic inequality and racial injustice is such a huge part of our culture that it sort of shows up in a lot of places you wouldn't expect it. But yeah, absolutely. Neighborhoods of color are being passed over for sort of the safety treatments they need. And there's a really smart guy, Charles Brown, who wrote a foreword to my book, who's a researcher who studies this stuff. And he says Black and brown neighborhoods, that when they have a safety problem, they get enforcement. So they get police coming to their neighborhood and ticketing them for jaywalking. And a lot of times that can be really harmful and explosive.
And can result in more deaths. Instead of being hit by a car, they could be killed by a cop.
Yeah, absolutely. Or beaten up. Yeah. Or fines. And the fine, it leads to this sort of a cascading sort of legal troubles. But then in white neighborhoods, when they complain, they're much more able to secure sort of the safety elements that they really need.
Are there nations that can offer a model for the U.S. to address rising pedestrian deaths? Are there places in the world where better city design, better policies on vehicle standards offer a model?
Yeah, so Western Europe is sort of the leader, Western Europe and Japan, on road safety. And some of the best performers, like Sweden and Norway, have per capita traffic fatality rates that are a quarter or a fifth as high as the United States. So if we could do as well as Sweden, for example, we could save like 30,000 lives every year in the United States on traffic safety. But even the United States is even underperforms compared to more similar nations like Canada. Canada actually has a per capita traffic fatality rate that's half of the United States. So if we could do as well as Canada, we could save 20,000 lives a year.
20,000 lives a year? I mean, that's just shocking when we think of, you know, the fact that it's many of these are preventable deaths. Are there cities in the United States that are starting to tackle this issue better than others? Are there models within the United States that are showing the right way?
Some of the success stories I point to in the book, one of them is New York City. There's been a really energetic movement for safer streets there. Only about half of New Yorkers have a personal vehicle in the household. So they were making a lot of progress. And in 2018, they had the lowest number of traffic deaths in 100 years, basically since cars came into the city. It was like a really like an all-time low, and it has gone up since then. But another city I like to use as a positive example is Detroit. Detroit's made some big improvements, and one of the big things they did there was just make sure all their streetlights were working. That sort of in itself helped produce.
That's it, huh? Something as simple as that.
Yeah. Helped produce a pretty dramatic decrease in pedestrian deaths, because about 75% of pedestrian deaths happen at night. So that issue of lighting is really important.
And also, I'm wondering if, you know, as we move into an era, hopefully, where we start to address climate change, our reliance on cars, at least it's the hope, will start to decrease. We saw during the pandemic, for example, when there were far fewer people on the roads, our air cleared up, there were more people walking. You know, we do want a future where there are more pedestrians and fewer cars. And that too plays into this this conversation around pedestrian safety, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really difficult challenge.
But and I should say more bikers as well. We didn't even get to talk about bikers, bicyclists.
Yeah, some of the modeling I've seen about what we need to do to reach our climate goals shows that we need to electrify our vehicle fleet, for one, but also we need to reduce the number of car trips we're taking by about 20%. So about 1 in 5 trips needs to be either eliminated or replaced with a sustainable mode. So that is a really, really heavy lift. And there's only a few cities in the United States that have managed to reduce car trips over the last several years.
So finally, I'm wondering if you think that this book can also empower individuals to pressure their city authorities, because unfortunately, change does come from the, I shouldn't say unfortunately, in general, change comes from the bottom up. So I imagine that you're hoping that your book will be a tool for individuals, particularly those living in neighborhoods that have seen pedestrian deaths, just be this tragic aspect of their community. Maybe they've lost a family member to a pedestrian accident?
Yeah, absolutely. Trying to sort of raise the level of the discourse on it, trying to raise the issue more generally. Yes, and absolutely. Some of the people who have taken this on are the people I highlight in my book are real heroes. I think it's a really difficult issue to take on, but we'll never make any progress without a lot of people caring. Yeah.
Angie, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Wish you the best of luck with your book.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Angie Schmidt, renowned national expert on sustainable transportation in the United States. She was a longtime national editor at Streets Blog, covering the movement for safe multimodal cities. Her writing has also appeared in the New York Times, The Atlantic, and more. And we've been talking about her new book, Right of Way, Race, Class, and the Silent Epidemic of Pedestrian Deaths in America. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.